Welcome to the Ocean Optimism Podcast. Immerse yourself in the inspiring stories of ocean conservation, successes, and solutions as we interview scientists, activists, and leaders from diverse backgrounds who are revolutionizing the future of our ocean. Their captivating tales will challenge your perceptions and ignite your belief that you too can make a difference. At Ocean Optimism, our goal is to fuel your passion for the ocean, broaden your horizons, and empower you to have a meaningful impact on ocean conservation. We provide pathways for you to contribute and actively engage in safeguarding marine ecosystems. Together, we'll explore proven strategies and initiatives that drive positive change, equipping you with solutions and opportunities that you can bring into your world to better engage in ocean conservation. I'm your host, Ellen Spooner, a scientist turned storyteller. Now let's dive into this ocean optimism journey. Today's episode is slightly different from our previous episodes in that we have the pleasure of speaking with two individuals from a company that is deeply committed to sustainability. This company is also a sponsor of the Ocean Optimism podcast, so I wanted to take the opportunity to learn a little bit more about their sustainable practices and understand the drive behind their eco-conscious endeavors. So with that, I would like to thank Inni Gadirmik, the Director of Pacific Capital Partners and FMR Brands, and Dorian Zaliski, the Marketing Director of Capital Partners and FMR Brands.
Thank you both so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks, Ellen, for inviting us.
So now, as we all know, our oceans are facing many issues from climate change to plastic pollution. What made you both first realize that our oceans were in trouble?
Well, I grew up in Southern California and I spent a lot of time on or near the water, play tennis, training at the beach, swimming, surfing. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience with the bodies of water in our great state. And you saw it over the years as they become more and more polluted. As we know, the California of today is not necessarily the Californias 20, 30 years ago. So particularly having moved outside of the United States over the last couple of years and seeing locations where smoking in particular is very much prevalent, cigarette butts are ubiquitous in places like that. I think we need to educate people about what their behaviors do to the overall environment.
For me personally, this realization came back when I was young. I grew up in the countryside of France, so I wasn't really around the ocean so much. But in my early 20s, I moved to California and spent a few years down in San Diego. While I really enjoyed my time there, I also realized how people sometimes treat the ocean like a trash can. I found so much garbage in the water when I would surf in the morning, and it really upset me. In the last few years, I also traveled around the world quite a bit and witnessed something similar. For example, this year I was in Vietnam for 2 weeks and I would see a beach full of plastic bags and waste like I have never seen before. I have been really disappointed by how little some people care about our oceans. And when I came back to Portugal, which has been my home for the last 3 years, I decided to play a more active role in cleaning the oceans. For example, I took part in some beach cleaning events and the amount of trash we gathered was quite shocking, really. We found enough cigarettes to create a pile, a big pile, and enough clothes to dress a human being. It's really mind-blowing to witness the beauty of nature and how we, as humans, sometimes neglect our responsibility to take care of it. It's just so sad. So what made us realize with Inni, well, it's a combination of personal experiences, traveling the world, and seeing the careless treatment of our environment. I think it's really about time that we all do our part to protect this incredible planet that we call home.
Yes, definitely. As you both have mentioned, our oceans are facing many issues. And so before we dive into a little bit more about how FMR brands are working to address some of these issues, I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about what FMR brand is.
Great question. So how our Motley crew came about? A few years ago, the principal of our organization had the thought of exporting California wines from Napa into Europe and other places. And we also looked into importing wines from Europe, particularly and also South America, into California. So we collected a great team of inspired individuals, and Dory is obviously part of that team, critical component. And we were working diligently towards identifying some products that we can work with. Of course, during COVID, we had a stop in our behavior, and we looked around to see what it is that we need to do now and for how long, because obviously business was very much impacted, very difficult to visit wineries, vineyards, and look at production. So in one of our business trips, we came up with the idea that what we really need to do is focus on what we call wedge products. So a wedge product is essentially a standalone product in a crowded but recognizable field. Prime example of that is kosher vodka. There are hundreds or possibly thousands of different brands and different types of vodka, but only one or two kosher certified vodkas. Frankly speaking, we did not even know that that was a thing. We just assumed that, you know, all vodkas are kosher, but apparently not. So with this idea in mind, we started scratching at the surface, and we listed a number of different projects that we can start building while the world was essentially standing still. So we thought that what we wanted to do is become the first or one of the first RTD producers in Europe. Up to this point, most of the RTD ready-to-drink beverages, especially in Europe, have been gin and tonic. So we wanted to go beyond that and cater to restaurants who deliver food. As we all know, during the lockdown, food delivery just took off. But a lot of the restaurants delivering the food only really had beer and sometimes wine on the menu. Of course, that was in Europe. I'm not so familiar with how things were in the United States. But you can't take a bartender with you. So we thought that we would create bartender grade or quality beverages that could be delivered along with food. So that was our first idea for a wedge product. The second one was alcoholic kombucha. You know, we've been drinking kombucha for many years. I was even accused at work for quote unquote drinking on the job, because as we know, kombucha has 0.5% alcohol in it, more or less. So we thought we like kombucha. Let's do something that is a little bit more unique. And of course, we saw it on the horizon that kombuchas in Europe are just about to take off. So the analogy that we've always used is it's a little bit like surfing. You know, if you're the first one out, you might get crushed by the wave. If you're the last one out, you're just going to miss the wave completely. So if we see a little bit more activity in the sector, and we saw a couple of different alcoholic kombucha brands looking to break into the European market, we said, okay, now this becomes a more recognizable product. Let's execute on that. And the third one was our energy drink. You know, in Europe, energy drinks are still very big. They're sugary. They're made in lab. They have, you know, wild colors. So the natural energy drinks are still somewhat novel, but people are looking into expanding their palate to encompass more natural and organic products. So we said, okay, let's start making one of the first all natural energy drinks. And that's what Savage Energy is. The third one in our portfolio was, of course, Refix. And that's a product that Dory identified, and it fit very naturally into our vision, because Refix is probably the only natural and organic, on top of being certified kosher as well, isotonic drink in the world, if you don't count something like coconut water. So we're very excited about this product and how it interacts with seas and oceans.
Exactly. Uni explained our projects very well. When we first came out with these beverages, we always had the environment in mind. We wanted to create products that are environmentally friendly and contain natural ingredients. That was our focus and remains part of our mission today. Over the years, we have become more conscious about topics like climate change, and we are constantly trying to reduce our environmental footprint. We are doing so by using recyclable material as our packaging, for example. And the natural ingredients that our products contain are also a way for us to make our population healthier. Our drink don't contain any added sugar and are low in calories. So we are very conscious about what we are feeding our population with. In a funny way, the recyclable packaging is actually related to our company name. The letter FMR from FMR Brands stands for the word FMR in French and ephemeral in English. So ephemeral in English means something that is short-lasting, and all of our beverages are a short-lasting experience, but remember it forever. And as we are becoming more environmentally friendly, we are also reducing the amount of trash and making the trash, therefore, a shorter lasting experience for our environment. This is the meaning behind the company FMR Brands.
Our commitment to sustainability is unwavering. We understand the urgency of feeding a growing population while ensuring sustainable food system. Climate change isn't an afterthought. It's an integral part of our business strategy. We strive to reduce our environmental footprint, preserve natural ecosystems, and promote biodiversity.
Wow. I really love to hear the story of how adaptive your company was in the face of challenges such as COVID and breaking into these new markets. And then not only breaking into these new markets, but also doing it with sustainability at the forefront of your minds. And I would say that speaks a lot to your company's care of our environment. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about specifically what FMR Brand is doing to help take care of not just our environment, but the ocean as well.
Sure. Well, our products are built around specific locations where they can be enjoyed. And we made some products that we would like to our customers to enjoy when they go to the beach. So, of course, we want to make sure that when that happens, our customers don't confuse a recreational area with the landfill. And pretty soon, if we do not take care of the environment, that's exactly what's going to happen. It's a sad thought to think that, you know, you and I can enjoy the beaches today, and kids and the grandkids from a couple generations from now won't be able to do the same thing. And why is that? Is because we are not doing our part today. And part of that involves educating our customers and other businesses that we operate with about how to naturally take care of the environment. It's not difficult, the product, but It does take a different level of communication. And that means that when we're working with our supply partners, when we're working with our retail partners, when we're working with governments on licensing, we actively inform them about what we are trying to do. We don't want to be just another one of these companies that puts up billboards on the side of the road and advertise our product. I think that our impact would be much more positive if we engaged in things like neighborhood cleanups, beach cleanups, park cleanups. Part of that is, of course, we gain some exposure, but the other part is the fact that we want to be different. We want to help the environment, and we want to make sure that our customers enjoy our products in clean environments.
Yeah, we actually recently took part in a beach cleanup in Caparica in Portugal, as our company, FMR Brand, sponsored a very big festival by the beach. We decided to make a positive impact on our environment by collecting all the trash that remained after the events. We actually teamed up with these organizations, Planet Caretaker and Andrea Noe, who is also known as the Trash Traveler. And on his Instagram page, he created some very shocking images of the amount of trash that he has collected. For example, you can see him laying down in a pile of 1 million cigarettes butts that he collected.
I definitely like what you were saying about having your customers be able to enjoy their drinks in a healthy environment. And part of that, as you guys well know, comes from providing products that are themselves sustainable.
So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about how your product Refix, very specifically, is more sustainable than, say, some other recovery drinks.
Sure. Well, one of the challenges that any manufacturer has is relates to packaging. And there is really no such thing as a carbon neutral, totally environmental, sustainable packaging. Plastic is great if you tend to reuse it. You can reuse plastic forever. The problem is that most people do not. Glass is, of course, on its face is very sustainable. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that the transportation cost, given the fact that glass is heavier, results in more gas being used in transporting and lifting it and storing the product. So we're trying to toe the line and try to find the least negative, impactful product out there. And we felt that glass and our newest packaging, which is Tetra Pak, are probably the ones that check most of the boxes. It's never going to check all the boxes. But again, unless we want to simply live like our ancestors did, you know, thousands of years ago, we really have to toe the line and try to figure out what is the path of least resistance in terms of identifying sustainable packaging. So for us, we like glass because at the end of the day, even if it breaks, it degrades into sand and can be made into road material or other construction material. Something that's a little bit more difficult to do with other packaging material. Obviously, there are a number of different elements when we're dealing with the food product that have to be taken into consideration. Refix, for example, is made with seawater.
Now, you may be asking yourself, how is a drink made with seawater? Don't worry, we'll get to that later.
A lot of, you know, we contemplated putting Refix into aluminum cans. One of the issues that we have identified was whether or not doing so would create something that's called aluminum oxide, which is essentially rust from aluminum. In small quantities, it's probably okay, but you never know what a small quantity means to a litigious lawyer out there. So trying to, again, navigate through a very complex field Some people like glass, some people may like a different product. We've gotten very positive reviews on Tetra Pak. And of course, there are different cultures to take into account. For example, in Europe, glass is perceived as being a more of a quote-unquote high-end product, whereas our American customers tend to view Tetra Pak as more of a avant-garde high-end product. So trying to navigate and juggle these competing interests is one of the challenges.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a challenge. But yet, despite those challenges, you guys still chose to move forward with this more sustainable packaging, whether it be glass or Tetra Pak. And it seems like...
And sorry to interrupt, but you know, glass is also transparent. And we mm-hmm. like our customers to see what's in the bottle. We do not want to hide, you know, the ingredients. We want them to see the murky sort of seawater that has all the minerals in it and all the parts from the fruit juices that we use. So it's much easier to see it as a natural product. And that's, again, another step why we chose to go with glass as well.
That's true. I never thought of that. But I do really enjoy the fact that when I look at the Refix drink, I can see what's inside of it. And it makes me want to drink it even more. So it's interesting that you guys still chose to do this more sustainable packaging, despite maybe some of the challenges of it being heavier to transport or maybe a little bit more difficult. I'm not sure in the packaging process, but it still seems to be more beneficial for your business to do it this way than, say, cheaper ways. Is that true?
The cheaper ways is it will get you some gains in the short term. But in the long term, I think that we really appreciate what our customers have to say and how they feel about the product, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who have it in hand most of the time. So if they're happy with the product, if they feel that it is not going to be impacting the environment in a negative fashion, it essentially meets one of our criteria. So we're always looking around for new ways to fold additional packaging materials into our overall business models. And of course, glass is something that most people simply do not have an issue with, be it on the shelf or be it in their fridge. Some of the other ones are a little bit more difficult to work with. For example, Tetra Pak, even though it's lighter, a lot of European countries do not have Tetra Pak recycling facilities. Mm. So that is something that's quite prevalent in the United States. And you'd think that in Europe, it would be the same way. But there are only two or three countries in all of EU that have Tetra Pak recycling facilities. And of course, Tetra Pak has aluminum and, you know, some form of plastic foil inside of it in order to keep the liquid from spilling out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's definitely interesting to think about the end life of the packaging as well, and the need for the places where the beverages are being drank to have the recycling facilities to be able to take care of that on the other end as well. So I'm aware that in addition to bottling your drinks in glass, I read that the energy consumed by your offices and factories also comes from renewable energy. Was it difficult for you to find factories that use renewable energy?
Absolutely. I mean, we're a small manufacturer, we're a small producer. So when we are dealing with micro production quantities, we're not Estrella Damm, we're not Estrella Galicia, you know, these beer companies that are based in Europe, it may be a little bit easier to find renewable energy driven factories. For us, we needed to make sure that not only we can find these production facilities, but that we also work with the micro quantities that we are making. Obviously, the micro quantities is not, it maybe it's a little bit deceptive because we do make hundreds of thousands of units, but that is only a small portion of what a brewery makes in a year, which is in the hundreds of millions of units. So at this point, we're still small, but of course, once we start growing and expanding, we'll have more options. And at that point, we have the ability to identify additional production facilities.
Yeah. Do you see this as sort of maybe the future of business and factories? Is there like a demand for a push towards using more renewable energy within the factory business supply chain?
I think that there is. There's of course a lot of greenwashing happening as well. So I'm sure that there are a lot of producers out there, not just in the beverage industry, but all across the board, do look for that because it sounds good on paper. At the end of the day, it's the connection that you also have with your shareholders, because they may be demanding an additional dividend or for their stock to go up in value. And sometimes finding renewable energy production facilities may be a little bit more expensive. And of course, once you're tying executive salaries to profit schemes, it makes it very difficult to really be driven towards, you know, finding something that is good for the environment. Fortunately, we are a private company, and therefore we can choose to work with whoever we want to without this additional pressure to squeeze every single profit dollar out of the projects that we're involved in.
That's interesting.
Have you seen that there is an increase in demand from shareholders for more sustainable products?
I have not experienced that. Of course, we are comparing ourselves to wineries, especially in Spain and Portugal, France. I think those can, you know, we've seen a lot of situations where they used renewable energy, they've reused the water. Of course, when we're talking about renewable energy, we should also talk about the water footprint. I think that's something that is also lost in the shuffle of these bigger issues. As you know, being in California a couple of years ago, there were a number of concerns about Nestle's use of water resources from, I believe it was the Sacramento area. And some of our products are really low water intensive ingredients, Refix in particular. It is essentially seawater. The sea is right over there. So we take it, we dilute it, we filter the water, and you know, one water bottle equals one water bottle. Whereas if you look at another products that are made in laboratory and whatnot, maybe it takes three or four bottles of water to actually make that one bottle of liquid. And that's something that we're actually very proud of. So we are a low water footprint product as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah, and I did want to ask a little bit more about that, as I know that part of Refix is made from seawater. And so, you know, there's the thought of, oh, humans can't drink seawater. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, seawater by itself, of course, has a high level of sodium in it, and drinking it long term is going to be damaging for your system. But our Refix only contains 20% seawater, so it's diluted. Essentially, most of the product is actually not seawater. The seawater component adds with the minerals that are found naturally in the oceans around the world. If you're a believer in evolution, we evolve from the oceans. That means that the minerals that are found in seawater are more easily absorbed by our bodies than something that is made in a laboratory. And of course, there's the whole science of nutrition supporting these findings as well, because some of the minerals, some of the vitamins can only be absorbed or more efficiently absorbed if they are in conjunction with other minerals and vitamins. So again, one of the examples that I like to use is if your doctor says, well, eat tomatoes because tomatoes are good for you, they contain lycopene or something like that. Great. but your body might just process it and you might not absorb that lycopene unless you put olive oil on tomatoes. So if you are absorbing, if you're ingesting a liquid that is has been naturally mixed for billions of years, and you believe that our, you know, organisms came from that environment, this product, your body more naturally absorbs it. And we're conducting now a university study for 1 year in the University of Murcia in Spain. And on the specific effects of not just seawater, but specific effects of refix in conjunction with things like blood pressure, with cholesterol levels, with weight loss, with gut biodome, and a number of other health-related issues.
Wow, that's so interesting. So it seems like not only is it more sustainable in the fact that you guys use less water in the production of it, but also it's better for us and more easily digestible by our bodies because it's more natural. The minerals in the drink are more natural. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. So there are a lot of studies that have been done in various countries. Spain is one of those countries that's on the forefront. South Korea, Taiwan, and Japan are also places where seawater is actually used as a cooking ingredient. As a matter of fact, in Spain, you can buy seawater for cooking at bio shops, at organic stores.
Why do you think it is within businesses' best interest to make these more sustainable products and make these difficult decisions?
Well, not focusing on being environmentally responsible amounts to business suicide. We can focus on the short term. We can plan around quarterly financial statements, but if everything goes belly up in 20, 50, or 100 years, you know, it's all for short-term gains. So if a company like Coca-Cola has been around for, I don't know, 150 years, let's say, if they don't change, or we as an industry do not change how we do things, they're not going to be around for another 150 years because there might not be another 150 years of humanity left. So if you're in this for the long term as a business and you're trying to think decades or centuries into the future, you do have to start focusing about making sure that we're doing things in this more sustainable fashion.
That's really interesting and really excites me to hear that coming, especially from the business side of things, that it's important to think more long term. And so how do we encourage other businesses to think more long term, like you're mentioning?
Well, there's no single magic bullet to solve for this. I think that it requires a little bit more of a full court press approach. Of course, businesses need to have an incentive to become more sustainable. If we make it more difficult for us to use glass, for example, because the glass that we are using has a different shape, a different size, and I have to go through a different approval process by the relevant states in the United States, for example, it makes it very difficult for us to conduct business in that jurisdiction, looking at it globally. Of course, the customers have to be educated. One of the issues and one of the things that bugged me the most is when I see people who smoke, and again, this is not a anti-smoking advertising or commercial, but you know, people smoke and they throw their cigarette butts out the window of the car, and they think, oh, it's made of paper and tobacco is natural, and therefore this is ipso facto biodegradable. Well, it's not, and you end up with a lot of arsenic and a lot of other toxins that end up seeping into the ocean, and people may discard it on the freeway, but the wind takes it and the stormwater ends up pushing it into the ocean. So I think that people have to be educated about the effects of the various conduct. And of course, governments need to channel us into a direction for focusing on the long game. This is really not a political issue. This is not right versus left, conservative versus liberal. This is a basic human issue. It's about having a clean planet. So, you know, if you're meat loving, hunting loving, you know, conservative, whatever, well, what are you left to hunt when there are no animals left alive? So don't you want to take care of the environment for that to happen?
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, making it easier for businesses to make sustainable choices throughout the production line, keeping customers aware and educated on their actions and the decisions that they make, not only when they're purchasing, but also at the end of their product's life cycle, how they dispose of them. And then also governments helping to create pathways that make it easier for the rest of us to make more sustainable choices. So despite all of these challenges that we face, what makes you optimistic about the future of our ocean and helping to shift businesses to more sustainable models and products?
Well, I think that one of those things that I'm always amazed by is the attitude that young people have. And it's weird to say because I don't consider myself old, but, you know, when you see, you know, kids who are 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, going out there to get involved with beach cleanups, with waste recycling and sorting operations, with neighborhood cleanups. I think that it's much more on the forefront than this issue is much more on the forefront than it used to be 20 or 30 years ago when I was at that age. So I think it's very exciting to see people getting involved with these types of issues. Of course, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we thought all we had to do is maybe sort recycling from the rest of waste and job well done, high five, and you move on with your life. But we came to realize that that does not actually happen and that we need to also be a little bit more cognizant about the products that we buy. Do I really need a plastic bag for every single item when I go to the grocery store? Do I want to bring my own bags if it's needed? Do I want to pick items that are organic or naturally or sustainably produced? So people do that kind of research before they pick a product. And then when you look at just the overall global commerce, there are a number of transportation companies that are switching to things like wind power and solar power cargo ships. We have these beasts that are navigating the oceans and, of course, you know, burning diesel. And of course, the diesel goes up in the atmosphere and then comes down in rain and polluting the oceans. Well, I think that renewable energy sources have gone advanced enough where we no longer have to rely on things like diesel or liquid natural gas to power our engines. So that's very exciting. I think that science create some problems, and science will also, you know, solve some problems.
Definitely. Definitely. That makes me feel really optimistic to hear that people like you and companies like you guys have this sort of mindset and are thinking this way. So what can individuals who maybe don't have a science background or aren't as familiar with this do to contribute to ocean conservation?
I would say that one simple step is to buy organic and locally sourced foods. For example, at a farmer's market, because buying locally sourced food means you are buying something that is produced near you. Therefore, you are supporting local businesses and you are reducing the carbon footprint. When you buy food that is not local, it means that it needs to be shipped from another country, and it is usually transported by trucks or planes that use gasoline or gas and increase pollution. So it's important to be mindful of where our food comes from and choose sustainable alternatives whenever possible.
With that, I want to say thank you both so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time. I definitely learned a lot and feel more optimistic about the future. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Ocean Optimism Podcast. We want to extend our heartfelt thanks to our esteemed guests, Ini Gadirmik and Dorian Zaliski, for sharing their valuable insights and experiences with us. Their dedication to sustainable business practices is truly inspiring, and we're grateful for their efforts to continue to push the edge on how businesses can embody sustainability. To our listeners, we hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, and that it left you feeling hopeful and motivated to play your part in preserving our ocean. Be sure to tune on your podcast notifications for next month's episode. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast on your preferred platform. And share it with your friends and family to spread the message of hashtag Ocean Optimism. You can also follow us on social media for the latest updates at Ocean Optimism on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Ellen's Ocean Inspiration on TikTok. Once again, thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next episode.